conference will now come to order now that Conrad's here.
The late Conrad.
Today is April 4th, and we are starting at 3:17 p.m. With us are Representative Chenault, Representative Thomas, Representative Sadler, Representative Johnson, Representative Miller, Representative Holmes, and myself, Chair Olson. We have two bills on the agenda today. House Bill 156 is first, and I believe Jennifer Sinnott from my office will be presenting that. Welcome, Jennifer. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And a fine bill, by the way, Mr. Chairman.
Is that a motion?
Would you like it to be?
Thank you. Good afternoon to the chair, members of committee. For the record, Jennifer Sinnott, staff to the chair, Rep. Olson. The bill you have before you today, House Bill 156, an act relating to the chair of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I see a lot of you have your names on the bill, so I imagine that most of you are familiar with the basics here. It's pretty straightforward. What this would do is it would allow the governor to select one member of the commission as the chair of the RCA. And that governor-selected chair would have a three-year term. And this obviously differs from the way that the RCA is currently structured. Right now, the commission elects one of its members to serve as the chair for the following fiscal year. And so that term obviously is just 1 year, and that chair can be elected to no more than three successive terms as chair. And then after that, that person would have to sit out for 1 year and then would be eligible for election again as chair. Historically, it's not a completely new concept that the RCA would be chaired by a governor designee. You'll find a handout in your packet, I believe, that gives a historical overview of the commission, and you'll see that, indeed, from 1970 to 2003, the governor designated the chair of the commission. So there is precedent here. And in terms of other boards throughout the state, it's hardly a unique concept either. There are 15 boards with a leadership structure like this, including the Commercial Fisheries Inquiry Commission, the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, the Labor Relations Agency, the Occupational Health and Safety Board, the Board of Marine Pilots, the Knick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, and the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. So the RCA will, you know, be in good company here. The new arrangement that HB 156 provides with its three-year term, it will give the commission a greater consistency of leadership than what it currently experiences. And this is important considering the fact that many of the issues and the dockets that are opened by the RCA, they span years. And so having a leadership structure that has been in place for more than just 1 year that we currently have, that's valuable and that would be in the public interest. Moving to the bill itself, it's just two sections. The first section does what I've described. It allows the governor to designate one member of the commission as chair, and then it sets the term at 3 years. And the second section, that is transition language to account for the current chair of the RCA. The current chair only has a one-year term, so that means his term is going to expire at some point in the next year. So under this transition language, the governor will designate the next chair once the current chair's term is up. So that's the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I understand we have the Assistant Attorney General Stuart Gehring on the line, and I believe he would be available to answer questions in addition to me. Thank you.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Currently, it looks like the chair is limited to three consecutive one-year terms that would have to set out. Under the bill, would the chair be allowed to serve successive terms?
There is nothing, Representative Holmes, through the chair, there's nothing in HB 156 that would prevent the governor from designating the RCA chair for consecutive terms. However, given that the term limit of a commissioner is 6 years, two consecutive terms would be the maximum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to make sure that we all are very clear on how it works. And so the RCA appointments are 6 years each and staggered, as I understand. And so theoretically, a governor would be more likely to choose somebody who had at least 3 years left in their term so that they could serve the entire term as chair, although that wouldn't, they wouldn't be required to do so. Is that correct?
If I could interject, I don't believe he would be able, he would put somebody in that had less than 3 years left. But we do have somebody on the committee that has previous experience with that, with other boards and commissions. And I, can you, if I could put you on the spot, Representative Sadler, can you recall any governor ever extending a the term of a presiding officer past their term?
Through the chair, to the chair. I honestly don't remember. I didn't get that close.
That would be something that you'd remember, though, wouldn't it?
It would, but I don't.
Oh, okay. So we can take that as kind of a no?
A definite maybe for the
record. A definite maybe, okay. Yeah, the best of my knowledge, that won't be an issue. Follow up?
They follow up. And I don't anticipate this being a problem. I'm just trying to flesh out. So if, for instance, the governor were to, and I don't foresee them doing it, but if they were to, if the governor were to select somebody as chair who had only, say, 2 years left on their RCA term, this bill wouldn't extend that person's RCA term for another year.
Representative Holmes, through the chair, my understanding is it would not.
Thank you. That was my understanding, too. I'm just clearing it all up on the record.
Any further questions for Jennifer? Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Now we'll open it up to public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, is there anybody online? Hearing none.
We have the RCA.
Questions only. We will ask them questions when we closed out public testimony and it's back to the committee. And we do have a AG online if there's any questions for the
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering whether the RCA or the governor's office had a position on the bill.
No, I believe both of them are neutral on this, and I believe that's the right call for both of them. I believe it's we neither support or oppose this bill, but neutral.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move House Bill number 156 out of committee with individual recommendation and attach zero fiscal note.
Fiscal note. Seeing no opposition, this bill will move out of committee. A brief at ease. Second item on the and last item on the calendar today is House Bill 50, I believe. And with us, we have the sponsor and a member of this committee, Representative Dan Sadler. Welcome.
Thank you,
sir.
To that
side of the table.
It's not that kind of comfortable. Thank you, Chairman Olson, for the opportunity to testify. For the record, I'm Dan Sadler, representative from House District 18. I'm here to present House Bill 50. First, I want to make clear what this bill is not. This bill is not seeking to allow anyone under the age of 21 to legally drink alcohol. It is actually an access bill with two basic elements. The first element of House Bill 50 relates to servicemen and women who are over the age of 21, as lined out in Section 1. HB 50 makes it easier for these people to enjoy companionship and the clubhouses of service and patriotic organizations. Patriotic clubs such as the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and AMVETS are wonderful institutions where veterans and active duty soldiers can relax, maybe have a beer with their buddies. They're places to enjoy the special understanding and support from others who have been there and understand the rigors of military life. Excuse me. The Alaska legislature has recognized these values. In 2006, they passed SB 209 to allow active duty men and women over 21 to enter such clubs using their military ID cards. However, some language does remain in statute that limits that access only to special occasions. HB 50 deletes that language, making it clear that such access is not limited only to special occasions. The second element of House Bill 50 relates to soldiers who are under the age of 21, laid out in Section 2 of the bill. This lets them enter licensed premises of patriotic clubs if they are members or the guests of a member. Again, it does not allow them to drink once they're there. The increasing pace of military deployments, commanders often have to turn to such clubs as locations for off-base commander's calls, which are informal meetings of small units, to welcome soldiers home, to send them off on deployment, or to share important information. Excluding soldiers under the age of 21 can erode unit cohesion and diminish morale for these groups. So HB 50 allows soldiers under 21 to enter such clubs if they are members or guests and have a military ID, and places that ability in state law. I conclude by emphasizing again, this bill does not allow underage soldiers to drink alcohol. It simply clarifies that soldiers over 21 don't have to wait for a special occasion to visit clubs, and soldiers under 21 can visit if they are club members or guests. Support of this bill will demonstrate that Alaska does indeed understand and want to accommodate the special needs of the young men and women in uniform who defend our freedom. and I'd be glad to take whatever questions I can answer. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Miller.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Dan, for your testimony on that and bringing this forward. Do we have a clear definition? Because I can just foresee that at some point some clever lawyer may point out, you know, exactly what is the definition of a club and what is exactly the definition of a patriotic organization licensed as a club. Do we have that in statute
Certainly.
Somewhere already?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Miller. Glad you asked that question. Definition of a club license is found in Title 4, 11.110, and it says that a club license authorizes a club organization to sell alcoholic beverage for consumption only on the license preference. And a definition of a club license, well, this is probably gets to it. A license may be issued to a club, fraternal organization, patriotic organization, or social organization that has A, been chartered by a state or national organization for a period of 2 consecutive years before application for license under this section, or 2, is chartered by a national organization and the national organization has maintained a chartered club organization within the state for a period of at least 20 years. And probably this goes to it. The organization licensed under this section must be operated for social, recreational, political, benevolent, or athletic purposes and not for profit. And the proceeds of the profit of the sales may not go to directors, owners, managers.
Thank you, sir.
Question.
Representative Schmalt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dan, if they're a member of the organization, this doesn't apply to them currently?
Which section?
Section 1.
Section 1, let's see.
If they are a member of the club, I would assume that if they are over the age of 21, then they meet all requirements and there's nothing special as far as special occasions.
If they are a member, that's true. That is correct. Through the chair, Representative Schmalt.
This is for if they're not a member, but they are over 21.
That is correct.
Then they have, it was only limited to them being able to be on the premises under special occasions. Or if they were
okay. No, just special occasions.
Okay. Yeah. If they were members of the club and their families.
Yeah. And certainly through the chair, that this is the purpose, is to try and eliminate confusion as to what constitutes a special occasion and who has the ability to declare a special occasion. Right. You can certainly make the argument that any day ending with a Y is a special occasion. But we wanted to make sure and clarify that there's this slight little hiccup to eliminate any possible confusion on that.
Okay, and a second question, maybe it's something I don't understand. If you're a member of VFW, are you allowed to take a friend of yours, over 21, in there and have a drink?
I believe you are, yes, sir, through the chair. Assuming you're saying that if they're not a member of the services.
If they are not a member of the services, I mean, similar to if you were an elk or an eagle, I won't put you on the spot with that, whether you're able to take someone else in, a friend, for instance, and have a drink or have dinner.
And through the chair, Representative Schnall, I know from personal experience, I've been a guest at the VFW 9785 in Eagle River, and so, yes. That's correct.
Representative Thompson.
Yes, they must be signed in as a guest with the sponsor member authorized to sign them in, but a non-member by state law cannot purchase an alcoholic beverage. The sponsor or the person that took them in must purchase the alcoholic beverage for them. They cannot spend money over the bar because they are not aren't a member of that organization.
I appreciate that. Through the chair, Representative Thompson, again, this is not a bill pertaining to purchase of alcohol, but access to licensed premises where alcohol is present. So he's absolutely correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm concerned a little bit about if you've got minors on the premises, what kind of liability are we affixing to the licensee if by accident, because normally you check ID at the bar and anyone who steps up to the bar is of legal age, all of a sudden now are we going to have everyone carded in the bar just in case there may be somebody under the age of 21 in the bar that just steps up and buys something?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I appreciate that question. It goes to liability. Current law does allow those who are over age 16 and under the age of 21 to enter the licensed premises where liquor is served if they're accompanied by a parent or guardian over age 21. I did speak with the canteen managers at least one club, and they told me that it's not really that much of a problem to have underage people, especially servicemen. Commanding officers or buddies will often watch out to make sure someone who is there present but cannot legally buy alcohol, they tend to watch out for their buddies and make sure they don't try and sneak drinks.
Thank you. And just because someone watches you doesn't mean that that relieves the club of liability in the event that they do serve a minor. Can they lose their if the minor goes up and buys it on their own? What's the liability of the license of the establishment?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the fair question. I'm afraid I can't answer the question about liability. That's not
actually. We have Shirley Gifford online, the chair of the ABC.
Oh, how convenient.
Shirley, are you with us? Shirley Gifford?
Yes, hello.
Oh, hi.
Mr. Chairman.
Hi, welcome back. Did you hear that question, or would you like it again?
Well, I would like it again. All I heard was Shirley Gifford's on the line, and then it just went dead, and so now you just came alive again.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Shirley. Craig Johnson. We're talking about a license where there's minors involved, and if a minor purchases alcohol, and what is the liability of the premise under that? Are we going to require people basically to cart everyone who buys alcohol in these premises if we allow this? Or are they liable, I guess, is my question.
Well, the liability for a minor purchasing alcohol is certainly with them. It is also with them civilly. It also lies with bartenders, servers. Certainly they have to ensure that the person they're selling an alcoholic beverage to is of age. So there is some liability there for the licensee, only if the licensee is the one who sold the alcoholic beverage to an underage person. So there is some liability attached.
Hello?
Yeah, actually, yes. So, Shirley, when you go around the state and do your compliance checks, do you ever go to these service organizations?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, we do go to the clubs. We try to do compliance checks there. We don't get into the clubs as much as we do other establishments. However, in the past 5 years, we have had 36 sales to a non-club member, meaning that would be my investigator, and then we've had 16 furnishings. You may or may not be aware of the effort to get magnetic cards or membership cards, and that was met with a lot of resistance, actually, and I backed away from asking for the membership card because of the federal law and the bylaws of these organizations. So I'm concerned if we're further restricted from going into the clubs and opening up more access to underage persons. You're talking about liability for being charged criminally. You know, I'm concerned about, you know, liability and the access to underage persons and, you know, what that does to our stats concerning driving after drinking and that type of thing. So, we get access. We get a lot of cooperation from the clubs. That's never an issue. But what they want to know is who we are when we enter, most of them, which is what they're supposed to do. So in terms of checking for that, I think our hands are getting a little bit tied on that.
Follow up?
So in your operations, if you have underage people in the bar, whether you've seen them drink or not, is that, if they were in Choku Charlie's or something, is that a violation? Is that something that you check for as well?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, underage persons are not allowed on premises unless they're with a parent or guardian. So the answer is yes. If there's an underage person on premise, say at Choku Charlie's, then they're charged.
And so what this bill would do is basically say in these service organizations, that would not be an issue. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes, that would be correct. If this bill were to pass, then they would, the person would be on the premise legally.
But again, we're limiting this to military personnel that are underage, I believe.
Is that a question?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
And if they were on base and going to the NCO club or whatever other club that they have on base, they can, while they're on base, they can be on premises without drinking already, can't they?
I would defer to the director of ABC for that question. I don't know about the on base.
Can they, Shirley?
Through the chair, Representative Olson, we don't enforce on military bases. So my understanding in Alaska, and I've heard both sides of that just in the past couple of days in discussions over this bill and HB 210, is that, first of all, I heard that they could go on to military bases, and then I understand just as of today that in Alaska, under 21s are not allowed on military in these clubs on military bases where alcohol is being served. So I would have to do further research. I apologize for not having that information, but we don't enforce on military bases.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, to Representative Johnson, I think if the thrust of your question is there any additional liability to the owner of the licensed premises for having someone who's over 18 and under 21, I would answer there's probably no more liability than any other licensed premises like Coots would have someone who is underage and also live legally in the company in custody of a custodian or a parent or guardian. There's no additional liability, but there is some liability in both those kind of cases, yes.
Or I believe it would be the same if my daughter was still under 21 and I took her to a restaurant with a full bar.
Right. And also, not testimony, but the information I've gotten from canteen managers is that, the NCOs and buddies do tend to watch out to make sure that underage, under 21 servicemen do not try and sneak drinks because it looks bad for them, and B, that the bartenders are also, as the licensed premises agent, pretty diligent about watching the young guys to make sure they don't try and sneak drinks. Not saying it never happens, but they have their eyes out for it.
Well, did we...
I have one question.
Oh, Representative Thompson.
Thank you. So let's say that we have four military personnel go into a private club. Three of them are over 21 years of age. One of them is under 21 years of age. They have to sign in at the door, and they're identified as one person being under 21 years of age, but you have a pretty good-sized establishment, and they set over far from the bar. They go to the bar and purchase alcoholic beverages for all four of them. So now you've got the three that do know that guy is under 21, purchase an alcoholic beverage from him. The bartender hasn't gone clear across the room to the back table to find out who is drinking those. Is the bar liable for that serving to under 21, or is it the three friends that were with him liable?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, while that's probably a proper question of law, I would state that there are laws against underage people drinking in bars, and this bill takes no action to support that or to take away from that. But for a proper answer about the law, I'll defer to Shirley Gifford.
Let's go with it, Shirley.
Yes, Representative Olson. These are tough questions. There's no doubt about that, and that's one of the things that we do in our compliance checks is go in and try to figure out if the people who are in these licensed premises are old enough to be there, and if they're not, are they with a parent or guardian? And I can see where this makes it just a little bit more, it makes it a lot more difficult for us on the enforcement side to go in and figure out who should be there and who should not. Now, if the person is allowed to be there under the law, but they're not allowed to drink, then, that adds another element of, is that drink sitting in front of them for them, or is it their buddy's drink, and who purchased the drink, and have they been drinking? So, and the access, of the alcoholic beverage to the under 21 person, it becomes more challenging.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't really know who to direct this at, so, you know, anybody can venture a question here or an answer here. It sure sounds like we're putting a lot more stress on bar and club owners, waiters, waitresses, bartenders, as well as the fellows who may be 21 and over who are purchasing alcohol. It sounds like there's got to be an awful lot of supervision of this younger person coming into the facility. You may deal with that as you like, sir.
Through the chair, Representative Miller, in doing research on this bill and through personal experience, and my impression is it's not that big a deal. I've talked to canteen managers and bartenders who say that it doesn't often come up as an issue. Occasionally does, but not very often. In other legislation, I remember considering other bills about similar issues, the public safety commissioners told me that this is not one of their big problems. I think Director Gifford has also said that there's not many violations at service clubs, which is one of the reasons why there's not as much need for enforcement efforts at service organizations. Now, I would also note that the law certainly still does apply and allow ABC enforcement agents to enter and examine the premises of patriotic clubs. So. Is that a fair statement, Shirley?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'm looking at the statistics over the past 5 years, and clubs, you know, I already mentioned that we had 36 sales to non-club members and 16 furnishings, and then we have other violations, sales to drunken persons. We don't get calls to clubs like we do other licensed premises, but we do still get violations there. We also don't enter clubs as much as we do other licensed premises. So it's really, you know, trying to compare the two is really quite difficult.
The only thing I can offer is anecdotal, and having entered the military at age 19 many a moon ago, but there are other ramifications from underage drinking when you're in the military. The military takes action on violations such as that. And I think going back to what I can remember, there was not a lot of underage drinking in establishments. It would be actually be on the base in barracks or someplace else, but it would be in a place less prone to having action taken against you. And it was probably more acceptable also, but probably shouldn't have said that on the record.
You were witnesses to such things.
I was witness, yes.
And for the record, Mr. Chair, this Section 2, which is the applicable section of this bill, does not open the door wider. It does not change the current status of law. Currently, those who are underage, who are under 21, and have a valid military ID can now enter licensed premises. This section merely eliminates the limitation to special occasions.
Want to wrap it up?
Sir, yes, sir. I would appreciate your support. I don't think this bill is about increasing underage drinking. It is merely an access bill to make sure that those who are legally entitled to enter licensed premises can do so without limitation under special occasions, and also clarifies that those who are over 21 may enter if they are guests. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Use the two sections. I guess I'd let it go at that.
Well, is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none.
Can I ask you a question before we
move on? Oh, certainly. I mean, we're going to keep around. Anybody online? Well, with that, we'll close out public testimony. And at least one question for Shirley.
Sure.
Representative Johnson.
Thanks, Shirley. Where does the ABC stand on this? Do they have a position?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, no. I think that I've raised just some of the concerns for you to consider in your deliberation. You know, upon special occasions, you know, I think that makes everybody's life a little bit easier. The other parts, you know what my concerns are. We really don't know when the special occasions are, so, you know, I don't have any objection to that. The other are areas that just concern me about access to underage persons.
Any further questions from the committee? You've been quiet.
I've been quiet.
Well.
I talked on the last bill.
What are the wishes of the committee if they don't feel like discussing it?
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming that I don't get the chance to make a motion.
No.
He's a member of the committee.
That'd be way too easy. So I guess we table it?
Mr. Chairman, that would be up to you. If you do table it, we couldn't discuss it.
No, let's keep discussing.
Because the motion is non-debatable.
If that's a motion, it's non-debatable.
So no, it was a question. It wasn't a
Mr. Chairman, would you like a motion?
Certainly.
To table?
Should we let Dan come back to the table so he can
vote on his own bill? Mr. Chairman, I'd make a motion that we move House Bill 5027-LS0254/A out of committee with individual recommendations and no attached fiscal note.
I'll object. And I'll speak to that objection if I could.
Certainly.
I think it's entirely inappropriate that we let the freshman legislator off that easy. having said that, Mr. Chairman, I will remove my objection.
No, we have another year left.
We could
carry this over to next year.
Is there any further objection? Seeing no objection, I guess we'll just move it out of committee. And with that, we will adjourn at 4:05.